The views expressed on this program are the views of the individual broadcaster and by no means reflect the view of Wesleyan University or the WESU management. Hello, and welcome to Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, a progressive-minded radio show about faith and action, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, and WESUFM.org, providing community radio that matters. I'm Maria Johnson. Today, a visit with monastery chef Anne Boucar. She is Belgian and Jewish. Two of her grandparents perished in the Holocaust, and as a child, her mother was sheltered from the Nazis in Catholic convents. Now Anne finds herself cooking for a few elderly priests and brothers at Holy Family Monastery in West Hartford. As you'll hear, her cooking is renowned at the monastery. And as you'll also hear, she's wonderfully honest. I'll get out of the way in a minute so you can hear her for yourself. First, though, a quick suggestion that you mark your calendar for 7 p.m. Thursday, June 15th, when the play 100 Saints You Should Know is performed at Middletown's Russell Library. The plot is described this way. When Father Matthew takes a leave of absence after questionable photographs are found in the parish rectory, he retreats to the dubious care of his passive-aggressive mother. But God's restless children won't leave the young priest alone, and pretty soon he's ministering to a sexually confused grocer's son, the single mother who cleans the rectory, and her hilariously angry daughter. But who is Matthew to advise on lust and salvation when he can't even bear to pray? Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? That's 7 p.m. Thursday, June 15th, at Middletown's Russell Library. The other bug I want to put in your ear is a plea to please support the station's spring pledge drive. You know you should give. It'll feel so good, trust me. Go to WESUFM.org/pledge and do what you can to support this really special radio station. And maybe give a shout-out to Reasonably Catholic when you do so. The secure website is WESUFM.org/pledge. Thanks. Up next, Chef Anne Boucar.
Get out in that kitchen and rattle those pots and pans. Get out in that kitchen and rattle those pots and pans. Well, roll my breakfast, 'cause I'm
welcome, Chef Anne Boucar.
Hello.
Hello. I don't typically get to talk with a French accent. That's so NPR. But it's B-O-U-C-A-R-T.
Yes.
And you pronounce it Boucar.
Boucar, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I feel so lucky to have you here to tell us your story, which is so interesting. The bit I know about it from my personal guru and really the patron saint of this program, Father John Baptist Pesch. He knows you.
Yes.
More than I do, and he put you onto my radar because of your very interesting background and the work you do at the monastery where Father lives and serves so well into his 90s.
Yeah.
It's astonishing. And
yes.
I think we both have such a great affection for him.
Yes.
He's
very kind. He's very, he's just has a great soul. Yes.
Yes.
Very good soul. Yeah. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about your job.
My job is great. I mean, I really find my dream job.
What do you do there?
I shop, I cook, I clean, and I'm in my element. I have ingredients, pots and pans, and I can be creative. And they love my food, and especially Father John, when I tell him, okay, this is a first, you know, I hope it's going to be okay. And he always said, you know, if it touch your fingers, it's going to be delicious.
He always, I think he's told me several times now that you make your soup from scratch.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Once in a while, I cheat whatever time. For, you know, time, for whatever time, or I decide to bake instead, or I have to clean, and so, but yeah, and then he comes with those great recipes from the New York Times, and, you know, I read a couple of them, and then I read one recently, and I say, oh, I'm going to make this. He said, well, that's the purpose why I gave you the recipe.
It's not for your edification.
No. So, you know, now I've been making it, and it's fun.
What is it?
It's fun. The last one I made that he loved was the black bean soup, which was a little bit, you know, had a kick to it, but he loved it. So
a little jalapeno?
Yeah, jalapeno, chipotle, you know, vegetables, and I kind of, you know, add my own touch, you know. So he likes it. You know, there's some European flavor in it.
Right. Awesome. And yeah, we're going to talk about your European background in a bit, but I'm just so intrigued by this kitchen life. I have to know a few basic things. So how long have you worked there?
Only since October.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And you've already made your mark.
Yeah. 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 I always love to cook. And it was always my passion. And one day I saw this saying, don't regret what you've done, regret what you have not done. And the next day I went and signed up to culinary school. And
how old were you?
I was 54. No, yeah, 54. Of somewhere, 53, 54.
Oh my
yeah.
gosh. Yeah. What had you done before that?
I work in offices, you know, customer service, and
oh my gosh,
just got bored. And
you need to be on the Food Channel, on a cooking show.
I would love
to. You know, one of those competitive shows.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm gonna submit your name. Yeah, I mean, you can.
Yeah, yeah. I have an idea for a show, but I'm working on, you know, feeling good about realizing, so.
Feeling good about realizing.
Yeah, knowing that I can do it.
Oh, okay.
Believing that I can do it.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
I think you're on your way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How many men, it's men,
there's,
do you serve?
Five, sometimes a sixth one come, but.
Oh, it's a very small
community. It's very small, yeah.
Passionist priests and brothers.
Yeah, yeah. And they're all wonderful. They all have their own personality, and you know, they're nice. One has a great sense of humor. One is Mr. Know-it-all. You know, one tried to put some shticks on me, and he find out right away that, you know, you don't do that, and so now
he's fine. Shticks.
Like he would, I don't know, he decided that there was too much food in a fridge and decide to, you know, rearrange it. And
and how did you let him know this won't stand?
Because he didn't realize that I was coming back in the kitchen and I saw everything moved and I freaked out.
And what did you do?
So I called, you know, who I needed to call, and it was taken care of, you know. He came back down and I said, you know who did this? And he's like, I did it. Well, you can't do that. It's my kitchen.
And
now we're best friends.
Oh, that says so much about you.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. It's fun. It's really fun. I'm happy when I'm, you know, creating and just, you know, yesterday I made an awesome Irish dish, you know, the corned beef and the cabbage. Oh, it was so good.
We're talking, we should tell the listeners, on St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
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 And I suppose the reason you're not having it on St. Patrick's Day is because this is Lent and they don't eat meat.
Yeah, but actually, I heard that there is some bishops or some higher personality in the religion that said that because St. Patrick's Day is on a Friday, they allow the meat.
A special dispensation.
Yeah. But I didn't want to take a chance. I'm figuring, okay, I don't know anything about the religion, so I'm going to be good and do what I know. But, and then I made them a Guinness and chocolate cake. And
what?
Yes. Yeah, I should have bring you a piece, actually. That would have
There's
been good.
There's still time.
Yes.
Hold that thought.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, my gosh. I should be giving you gifts, but wow, yeah. That sounds pretty good.
Yes, it Guinness was fun.
Guinness and chocolate cake. So, yeah. So, you just said that, you know, you don't know much about this religion, so you're not Catholic.
No, I'm not. I'm Jewish.
And when I asked you as I was setting up here, because we're alone in the studio and technology is not my strong suit, and I asked you if you pray, this is the moment, and you said, no, you don't. So not only are you not Catholic and you're Jewish, but you don't really have a religion, except culturally.
No, I believe in there is something greater than us. Mm-hmm. I believe at a higher power. Mm-hmm. And that's what I believe. I don't believe it's actually, you know, the form of a human being. It's just anything greater than us. And I do pray my own. It's not actually a prayer as known, you know. But actually, when I put something in the oven for the first time, like the cake yesterday, I did a little Jewish prayer as I'm closing the door, and it came out right. So,
can you tell me the prayer?
Oh, it was just something that when I was married, my family, we used to do, you know, a little Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu, should the cake come out good and wonderful, amen, and then close the door.
Oh, my God. If we weren't busy making this episode, I would hug you. That is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a prayer to God to take care of the
project.
Of the
cake. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you're probably more religious than most of my listeners.
You're listening to an interview with Anne Bukar, who cooks for the elderly priests and brothers of Holy Family Monastery in West Hartford. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from WESU, 88.1 FM Middletown, providing community radio that matters.
Hi, I'm Cindy Mokel. I'm a convert who is still exploring what my having joined this Catholic Church is all about. Maria Johnson's show, Reasonably Catholic, is just a ticket. It's lively and challenging for anyone who wants to explore what this movement is all about. And in order to thank WESU for having a program such as Reasonably Catholic, it would be great if you would send a contribution to the station, because WESU runs on a shoestring. Your donation will be very carefully spent, and it will help with all the programming. You can make your contribution at WESUFM.org. Thank you so much.
You work in a Catholic monastery with people who have, men, who've given their lives to God, and Catholics have to non-Catholics, I'm surmising, strange ways and rituals, and this must be rather new to you.
Yeah, it is. And
what do you make of it? What do you think? Is it? So foreign that you scratch your head and say, how can they even believe this? Or do you just kind of feel interested in it in a kind of curious way? I'm just curious about how you interact with the culture, the Catholic culture that you're immersed in every day.
Actually, this was not, when this job came along, this was not the first thing that I thought of. It was really just being on my own to cook and get out of you know, whatever, what I was. And
so it wasn't an issue.
It wasn't an issue, thing. No. Yeah.
But
no,
now here
no,
you are.
No.
And these priests are.
You know, first I was really, you know, concerned. I didn't know the names. I didn't know the difference between brothers and fathers. I was worried about not calling them, you know, the right thing. And so, but they was just so nice and so open and talk about.
Are they mostly elderly?
They're elderly. They're from 65 to 93.
Okay.
Yeah. And they're just so open about talking about religion. They have a lot of respect for Judaism. They say that, you know, their Bible would have not be anything without the Old Testament. And they're very, we talk about World War II and the involvement of my family, and they're very interested. And
yeah, we're going to get to that.
Yeah.
It's an amazing story.
Yeah, thank you. When there's some religion, you know, some holidays, they ask me what it is and what do we do.
Oh,
and,
like Purim.
You know,
and,
yeah, Purim. Yeah. And we had Hanukkah. I made them latkes. They loved it. You know, Passover is coming, so I'm going to make them, you know, Passover food. And they're very interesting. And then they teach me about Catholicism. You know, the other day I asked, what is the difference between ordain and profess?
Oh, professed.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So
what is the difference?
I don't even know. Oh, okay. When a priest is professed, he's a brother. And when he's ordained, he becomes a father.
Okay.
And both, one can do things and one cannot. Don't ask me which
There's
one.
There's a lot of rules.
There's a lot of rules, yeah. So, yeah, and then I just got really into it and do a lot with, you know, a lot of respect and really when Ash Wednesday came, you know, very interested about what to do and to do it properly and be very respectful.
Because there are certain restrictions at Lent about how many meals you can eat. I know when you're elderly, the rules are relaxed a little bit.
Yeah.
But you can really only have one main meal.
Yeah.
Is that what you
No, they had lunch and dinner.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what kinds of things did you make?
I just made fish.
Yeah.
You know, I made tilapia for dinner. And what did I do for lunch? I think I just made a vegetarian soup and tuna fish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very simple. And they loved it. Yeah.
Are you involved in cooking for the retreats?
Well, I thought I was going to be, but this is not happening. So it's a bit of a not very positive subject.
Oh, a sore point.
Yeah.
Oh, I think you should count your blessings.
Yes.
Just saying.
Yes, I am. I am. Yeah.
No?
Yeah, I'm very happy where I am. My own kitchen, my own food.
And freedom.
Yeah, freedom. Freedom and creativity, you know, that's really who I am, is being creative. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Let's talk about your family background. Mm-hmm. Shall we start with your grandparents?
Yeah. So my grandparents were came to Belgium from Poland, and they...
When?
I don't know when to start, though. I'm not sure when my grandmother went to Brussels from Poland, but my grandfather actually left Poland to go to Germany with his brother, took a boat to America, and got reject on the boat.
Do you know when that was?
That was, I guess, in the 20s,
okay.
You know.
Wow.
And
jeez, how history repeats
mm-hmm.
itself.
Girl, you said it good. I thought, oh, can I say that?
Yes, you may.
Yes. And his brother actually escaped. His brother actually made it and escaped in the street of New York and ended up being very successful, changed his name, and ended up being very successful in New York in a dry cleaning business. And my grandfather went back to Belgium and worked in the mines in the south part of the country.
What kind of mine?
To mines coal.
Sorry, yeah.
To have to be able to stay. And then met my grandmother, and then, you know, he was a tailor in Poland. He was a tailor. So settled in Brussels, and he did his work as a tailor. And then my mother came along in 31. And on her ninth birthday, you know, the German invaded Brussels. So my grandparents didn't want to just sit there and do nothing. So they were freedom fighters. They created newspaper. My mother remembered actually the printing machine in the apartment with the ink. And, you know, those days it was with the little letters, and you put the letters to make the words. And those newspapers were full of codes for the Jews underground. So they became part of the Belgian resistance. And my grandmother had a Polish friend that she took her in the apartment. So this woman shared my mother's room, and then she betrayed my grandparents. Yeah. So on my mother's 12th, the 2 days after her 11th birthday, 42, the German came to get my grandparents. My mother stayed alone, and at 6 o'clock at night, her father came back alone. And my grandmother ended up in Malines, which is was a jail. Actually, no, Saint-Gilles, which was a jail in Brussels that the German took over. And then after that, she went to Malines, which was, I guess, a place for Belgians to go before the camp, and then went to Auschwitz and never came back. So,
what was her name?
Her name was Hanna Goldwasser. Hmm. And I'm sure, actually, my mother named me after her. Oh. You know, Hanna is Anna, Anne in French, in English, yeah.
And what happened with your grandfather?
So my grandfather decided to continue the resistance work, but he went into really the resistance was the arms and really going and, you know, trying to help out with blowing rail track for, you know, really doing really active resistance. Mm-hmm. And he knew that my mother would be in danger staying with him. So she heard about this group called the La Défense Juive de Belgique, which is the Belgian Jewish Defense Group. I'm not sure if the words are in the same order. But and he met Madame André, which is a wonderful lady who still lives, André Gerlen. She's over 90 now. She still lives in Brussels. And she saved a lot of children from infant to teenager. She took them to families and convent.
Including your mom.
Including my mom.
She was brought to a Catholic convent.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, by train.
And what happened
to
your grandfather?
My grandfather was taken.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. And every time I go to Brussels and every time we go by the place where he was taken, my mother tells me the story like it's the first time, like she never told me. And I respectfully acknowledge like it was the first time. You know? So
So you don't know what happened to him. He was
taken. Oh yeah, he died in Auschwitz,
oh,
yeah.
Oh gosh.
Well, we don't know if he died in Auschwitz on or the March of the Death, but you know, one of the two. Yeah.
So your mother is living in this convent. Is she aware of her?
She knows. Yeah. She knows because there was one day where the German came and find a picture of her and her mother, and at 12 years old, she had to deny who she was because the nun had given her a Belgian Flemish name, Janine van Meeragen. And they came to her and say, we know who you are. This is you and your parents. And at 12 years old, she had to deny who she was because she knew that she had to survive. Yeah.
Wow, the Germans were thorough.
Yeah. 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 So then she had to leave the coven because obviously some nun gave them away. And she had to do that three times.
How did she leave? What?
The nuns, some nuns, they were good, took her and said, okay, you can't stay here. Let's go. And they took her somewhere else. Three
where?
Times. She went to a convent named in Wezenbeek op Bem, which is on the outskirts of Brussels. And then from there, she went to Soigny, which is another suburb of Brussels. And I'm not sure where the third place is.
Are they all convents?
They were all convents.
So interesting. Yeah. My gosh, this Catholic thread is running through your background.
Yeah. And then she was, she had a communion.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. She has a wonderful picture that she donated to the Holocaust Museum.
Was this a forced thing?
Yeah, it was really to, you know.
She had to become a Catholic.
She had. Is a communion part of conversion?
I would say.
I don't know what it requires to convert, so.
Wow.
I don't know. But she knows she's Jewish.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Then what happened?
Then what happened? When the war ended, the nuns say, okay, you can't stay here anymore. So she literally wandered the streets. She went back to Brussels, went to the South Station to see if the Red Cross had list on the wall of people who came back, and her parents never came back.
This is a chat with Chef Anne Bukar, who is Jewish and whose mother, as a girl, was hidden in Catholic monasteries to save her from the Nazis. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, providing community radio that matters since 1939.
Hello, this is Denise J. Stankovics, editor of Today's American Catholic, based in Farmington, Connecticut. As editor of a liberal, independent publication not affiliated with the institutional church, I recognize the importance of radio stations like WESU that provide an outlet for alternative viewpoints. For example, Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, hosts guests whose views may well differ from what you hear in church. It invites listeners to weigh varying perspectives on faith and action. WESU is one of the country's oldest student-owned and operated college radio stations. To ensure its future, please help it reach its goal during this campaign by making a donation to this volunteer-run community voice. You can do so at WESUFM.org. Thank you.
What will be, will be.
Then what?
And then one day she met this girl, Evelyn, who was the daughter of friends, non-Jewish friends of my grandparents. And her father was there, and he said, well, Sarah, you have to stay with us. You have no place to go. So he became her tutor. Not a tutor. Okay. What do you call that in America? Not adopting.
Foster father?
Foster, okay. Yeah. And so she stayed there until she was 18.
And then what?
And then she went on her own.
Meaning what?
And she got an apartment and she got a job. And, you know, she finished school when she was in third grade. So she's really a self-educated lady.
Wow.
You know, now she speaks seven languages, you know, and she's...
So she's still with us.
She's still with us, yeah. My parents both still live in Brussels.
Oh, wow.
They're 85 and 87.
Bless their hearts.
Yeah.
They never wanted to come to America.
Mm-hmm. No, they don't like it here.
They don't like it here. They've been here.
They've been here.
Ah, and it's just not home.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
No.
So what's your story? How did you come into
the
picture?
So I came along in 57, and the only child. And
like your mother.
Like my mother, and like my father.
Yes.
And my father's not Jewish, and really growing up was nothing until I realized, you know, why don't I have two sets of grandparents? Mm. And then once in a while, my mother would... tell me a story here and there, but not very, you know, not very clear.
She was protecting you.
Yeah. Yeah, she was protecting me, yeah. And then when I became a teenager, I realized that I was hanging out with all the Jewish girls in my, I mean, all, there wasn't a lot of Jewish girls, but the Jewish girls in my school. And I was wondering, you know, why? There was some affinity, you know, with them. And then I decided to join the Jewish Center in Brussels and took Hebrew classes, and one thing come to another, I decide to make Aliyah, which means moving to Israel.
Oh, you lived on a kibbutz?
So I didn't, because I was going to move there in December 83, but then in July 83, I came to America for a wedding, and I met my ex-husband.
Oh, you came for a wedding.
I came for a wedding.
And ended up getting married and staying.
Well, I did, and I mean, I did back and forth, you know, and and decide to come with a, you know, it was easier those days to come to America. I mean, it was easier. Not if you're legal.
Don't even go there.
If you're legal, you have so much thing to do. I came back, I came in this country with this huge manila folder and stayed for hours at the customs to verify everything, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm not going to go any more detail with that.
It was easy, but it still was, required lots of paperwork.
I had a sponsor, and you know, and
So then what?
So I came to America and tried to fit, you know, in the Jewish community. And
what town, what state?
In West Hartford.
Okay. How come West Hartford?
My ex-husband was a lawyer. He graduated from UConn law school. So we ended up in West Hartford.
Which is where the monastery is.
Which is the monastery.
So you didn't travel
but I was
too
in
far.
The Jewish. I lived in the, like, what they used to call the, what they call, I think, also the reservation, which is Bishop's Corner, you know, there, and, you know.
Yeah, that's funny.
So.
There is a quite prominent Jewish community in West Hartford.
So then, you know, my kids went to Jewish day school, and they were bar and mitzvah, and. They know who they are. They know their background. They're very solid kids, as, you know, Jewish kids.
Talk about your son, the journalist.
Oh, my son. My son is great. He he's 29, and he's a sports journalist at KNBR in San Francisco. And he started just with her doing the website of the sports part of the radio station, and now he's a manager, and he's oversees six websites, and he's working, he's doing really well. He's working with the 49ers, and he's
it's radio.
It's radio.
And of course the internet.
Yeah, and he does a lot of programs, activities outside, and
I ask you to talk about him because of the incident, to say the least, in Belgium. And also because you say he has a theory about your, about the trajectory that your life has taken.
Yeah, what happened is that a lot of my family, I mean their family, the uncle and aunt, were really taken by the fact that I am now working for elderly priest, and how it comes around with the nuns saving my mother's life 70 years ago. And I couldn't see it. And I really couldn't see, you know, the connection until my son, who has a lot of wisdom, said, Ma, you don't see it because you don't see how big it is. Not how big it is, how much I'm comparing the greatness of one and the other, meaning how great it was that the nuns literally saved my mother's life. And here, I'm not really saving anybody's life, but I am providing good food and good meal for those elderly folks for, you know, the end of their life. I mean, it's, you know, scary and uncomfortable to say, but that's what it is. And how the fact that I'm comparing is wrong because it is as great as. He say, you know, Ma, I know you. if you had gone to Syria, for example, feed the hungry people, you know, he just took a, not to be into politics, just he took just
a random
country, a random country. He said, then for you it would have been big, but it doesn't have to be that big. And I got it. I got it how it just comes around. And yes, it's not about comparing. It's about what is being done, you know. And I'm just so grateful that, you know, that I got it. And I can go to work with that now, that I am doing something great, you know. Yes, I am happy that I'm in my element, but there is something else with it, you know. So it's great.
And this, I'm not trying to belabor the Catholic point, but there
What's
is.
What's belabor?
Belabor it, like overdo it, make too much of it. But there is this thread that runs from your mother's rescue to your, it's like you're giving back.
Yes, yes. Yeah, yeah.
What does your mother make of it? Working in a Catholic monastery, does she like think, "Oh my gosh, history's repeating itself"?
No.
Did she have a positive experience in the convents, or was it kind of a bitter memory?
I think it was. I don't think it was a very good.
So as much as
memory,
she
says some of there was one convent where the nun were mean.
Oh.
There wasn't food every day, you know, and just to not being yourself.
Yeah.
I think the lack of self-expression for 3 years, it's got to be big, you know.
So interesting. So as much as these nuns were doing a good deed, to say the least, they still had a kind of stifling effect on your mom and other rescuees because they were probably expected to fall into the Catholic routines and even rituals.
Yeah.
I can see that that would
I
be
I think it was maybe a resentment from the nuns. You know, they knew what they had to do, it, but it was still a little bit of resentment of doing it. I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's what comes up
so
for me.
So your mom isn't feeling that, like, this is a lovely end of the story with you in the monastery.
No, no. With mom, there is no lovely end of the story.
Sorry to laugh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
If you are just joining us, this is a visit with monastery chef Anne Bukar, who cooks for the elderly priests and brothers of Holy Family Monastery in West Hartford. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from WESU 88.1 FM, Middletown, community radio that matters.
There's no listener-supported community radio without listener support. Donate online at WESUFM.org.
And the seasons, they go round and round, and the painted ponies go up and down. We're captive on a carousel of time. We can't return, we can only look behind from where we came, and go round and round and round in a circle.
Talk about what happened in Belgium.
So last year, March 22nd, 2016, was a horrible day. I was there.
Visiting.
I was visiting my parents because my mom had back surgery. And my dad is not doing great. So someone needed to go and help him. So I stayed there for the week that she was at the hospital. And on March 22nd, in the morning, I took the metro to go get my mom at the hospital. And Dad stayed home. And as we were not close to the airport, and I was not close to the station that got bombed, but in the station that I was, they made us get out of the metro, and which was only a station away from the terminal, which was the hospital, so it wasn't too much of a walk. But nobody told us why. They just said, okay, you need to get out. And we kept saying, well, it's not the terminal. It doesn't matter. You need to get out. So they got out. They closed the metro behind us. And only at the hospital I find out what had happened, because all the hospital in Brussels had to be on standby.
What had happened?
What had happened was the bombing of the outgoing hallway. The departure hallway in Brussels with three terrorists who had bags full of bombs and nails. And then I think it was 20 minutes later, in a very, very busy, crowded metro station, a suicide bomber exploded in the train. So, you know, I helped mom to leave the hospital, and we had to wait a long time for a taxi because the streets were, you know, jammed. So we had coffee, we waited, and then we went home, and the street was just, it was just like, there was traffic everywhere, you know.
Sirens
everywhere. And the next day, the subway was closed. The army was all over the streets in front of my parents' apartment building. And it was very scary. Yeah. It was very scary.
I would think for your elderly parents especially, they must have had flashbacks to the war.
Well, my mom did. Yeah. For my mom, it was really scary. Yeah. And then my parents live downtown Brussels, like really in the heart of Brussels. And there is a building which used to be the Wall Street kind of Brussels. It's an old, very old building, and there is a square there. So people went there to put flags and flowers and candles. And so it was a walking distance. And that was really, it was really beautiful. It was really peaceful and... it was just before all the media came with tons of cameras from everywhere and the trucks, it was very peaceful. And people from all kind of background came. And also one thing that I have to say, this terrorism thing was created by extremist Islamic. But the amount of taxi driver who are mostly Muslim or Islamic was wonderful. The outpour of them going into the airport, taking the rescue, put them in their taxi, give them a free ride home, and then rush back to the airport and take more people or stay there and comfort people until, you know, the care can come. Really made me realize that, you know, there's some good ones. Yeah. There's really some, like everything else, you know, there's some good ones, there's some crazy ones.
Did the media bring that out?
No.
You just know about it.
No. Because on this memorial place, there were people from everywhere. You know, there was actually an Israeli flag there. They was all put in a ball. And I went among all the thing that people leave there and opened it up. And, you know, I told that to some of my friends in America, and they say, you crazy. I said, why are you crazy? We have to show this. This is in a ball. Someone just thought this was, like, you know, not relevant, and I put it there, and it was very scary, you know. And then I didn't know how to come home because everything was closed, but I ended up, you know, taking the train to Amsterdam and came back. But
in the
scary.
Meantime, your son interviewed you.
Yeah, so my son had told about his at his radio station that I was there. So someone else actually, you know, interviewed me, and the day after.
Yeah.
So it was right there, and
you must have. I mean, how did you even comport yourself? I would have been in shock. I wouldn't have been able to even put my thoughts together.
Well, I did. I just, I don't know. I just answered the question, you know. I remember one question very strongly that they said, is this a surprise? And it's not a surprise. It's not a surprise. I am not for the banning thing and, you know, but there's got to be a respect. There's got to be a middle ground, you know.
It seems like no one is willing to take a nuanced approach. It's build a wall or shut the doors. I mean, it's just everything's so drastic.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be drastic. But on the other side, the others have to understand what they're doing. You know, when I came to America, I right away had to learn English. Americans were not going to come to me and speak French because I'm in America.
Yeah.
I had to live like an American. Did I like it every day? No. Do I still sometimes feel like I'm wish I was in Belgium and do things? Yeah. You know, do my personality reflect a European strong woman who's not afraid to say what she thinks and it can offend America? Yeah. You know, there's this big joke that's been going on. It's like, okay, let's see what America's going to be offended with today, you know? Yeah, you know, but it's...
Are you saying that we're touchy?
Oh, God, yes. Oh, yes. Gotta watch everything you say and, you know. And in Europe, it's way more forward, you know. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Are you getting at what we call political correctness, that we have to be careful not to offend people by...
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And there's less of that in Europe.
I from what I remember, I mean, you know, unless things have changed, but, you know, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Belgium, it's really, it is what it is. Here is, oh, my God, really, you know.
Hmm.
So, yeah. And we need to be more, you know, more respectful of one another and whatever this person is doing is just not, it's just not respectful, and you know,
this person being,
you know, the big orange guy.
I think we'll leave it at that.
Yeah,
why
yeah.
should we speak his name?
Yeah.
All right.
No.
Now we have just a few minutes
okay.
left, but I've been kind of wondering about something, and I don't even know if it's going to.
See, here you are. You're doing the American thing. Like,
what?
You hesitate. Just go for it.
I know.
Just go
you're
for
right.
it.
I'm always
just
qualifying.
Go for it. The way I react to it is my own thing.
Okay,
it's not
okay.
you.
Well, no, I just thought maybe you haven't even heard of this film. But hearing
film?
About your life cooking, being creative in the kitchen and serving these people, I just keep thinking about the movie Babette's Feast. Have you ever seen
I
that film?
I never saw that movie.
Oh, you must. I feel like I don't even want to tell you about it because it's going to ruin it.
Okay.
You must, I'll write it down for
okay,
you.
Okay, Babette's Feast.
Babette's Feast. Father John knows about
okay.
it. And he will understand when he listens to this why I'm bringing it up. Because I feel like you are Babette.
Oh, wow. Is it a French movie?
It might be, actually. It might be. Oh, wow. I'm going to look it up, but I don't know. In any case, we're here in Middletown. Middletown has a beautiful library. You might be able to grab
yes.
it, you know.
Yes.
So, okay. That's your homework.
Okay. Okay. That's great.
What is for dinner? Are you going to work from here?
Yes, I'm okay. going to. And tonight is going to be, I'm going to make a roasted pepper soup. I find this new vegan recipe because the Father Superior is vegan. So I don't always do vegan, but I find that recipe and I like to share it with him. So it's going to be roasted pepper soup. I'm going to make codfish for dinner and string beans sauteed with almond and I think rice pilaf.
Oh.
And I got this beautiful pineapple, and I know Father John, he's so funny. He takes a little bit of pineapple, and then he puts it on the side of his robe.
Cassock.
Cassock, is that what it's called?
I don't even know. It's but he
robe,
wears a long, you know, black.
Yeah, with yeah. A, you know. So he goes and he eats them, and it's very...
Like he brings it, he takes it...
And he brings it in his room, yeah, yeah. He's, so...
I'm sure I don't have to tell you that he's especially fond. Sometimes I'll give him a little gift of endive lettuce and gorgonzola cheese.
Oh, he loves his gorgonzola cheese. Oh, God, and he doesn't wrap it well, and it sticks up the whole refrigerator. He's so good. Oh, yeah, he loves it.
Yeah.
He's really great. Yeah, yeah. And he says, you know, whatever I experiment. And he said, I said, well, I hope you like it. I think I shared that before. But he said, you know, if you touch, if your fingers touch it, it's delicious. I'm sure it's
when
delicious.
We go out for a meal together, he is so appreciative of the food. It could be something so simple, you know, broiled salmon. Oh, this is great fish. It's a beautiful thing that he's so appreciative, you know.
Yeah.
I watch and learn.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. He's wonderful. And he really helped me with he really helped me with appreciation, because I used to be very hungry for appreciation. And now that I do something that I love and I know I'm good at, and him appreciating more, it's totally filling up this hunger for appreciation, and it's wonderful.
Oh, Anne. That is just the perfect note to end on.
Yes.
I appreciate you.
Thank you.
I really appreciate your
coming
down here and sharing your amazing story. It should be a movie. Honest to God. Fantastic.
You.
And what a beautiful person you are. And so inspiring. You are. You're a strong, creative, giving person, and so wise.
Thank you.
An honor to know you.
Wow.
I hope you'll come back again.
Yes.
We have to find a way
to
talk about something else.
Yes. Oh, there's plenty
to
talk.
That was a visit with Chef Anne Boucard. If you missed any of the episode, you can find it online at reasonablycatholic.com, along with pictures of Anne. We'll be back next week with a repeat episode to be determined. And don't forget, there's a performance of 100 Saints You Should Know at Russell Library at 7 p.m., June 15th. Till next time, I'm Maria Johnson. Thanks for listening, and also for giving what you can to support the station at WESUFM.org/pledge. If you've already done your part, thanks so much.
Thank you very much indeed. I'd like to conclude this evening's entertainment with a piece by an old departed friend of mine named Harry Champion, who died in 1880. This piece appears called, Oh, That Gorgonzola Cheese. I really hope you enjoy it. My wife lately bought a gorgonzola cheese. She got it on a shelf marked cheap. She thought her loving husband it would please, if only till my birthday it would keep. She took that cheese and she locked it in a drawer. A month went by, or perhaps a little more. Some friends came to my party.
I'm glad you could come.
And the dinner went off great. But when the missus placed that gorgonzola on the plate, that gorgonzola cheese, it wasn't over healthy, I suppose. Our tomcat fell a corpse upon the mat when the lip went up his nose. Talk about the flavor of the crackling on the pork, and nothing could have been so strong as that beautiful effluvia that filled our house when the gorgonzola cheese went wrong.